Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we are trying to help you to become the boss you always wish you had yourself. And today, we have a very cool program, a unique guest and a unique format here. So the concept, the model of servant leadership, of being a servant leader, goes all the way back to 1970 when Robert Greenleaf coined that term. Now today, many different consultants and coaches and gurus talk about servant leadership or being a servant leader, but most don't know that Robert Greenleaf was really the founder of this concept and really carried the torch for decades. And Robert Greenleaf passed away in 1990. But today, I have on the program the CEO of the Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership, Pat Filatico. Pat worked at IBM for 31 years as an executive, so she has this real-world perspective and this lens through which she now spreads the servant leadership message. The model of servant leadership is so critical, probably more critical today, I think, than ever before. I realized, wow, we need to do our part at LeadX to spread the word, to help people to understand what the real servant leadership framework is all about. And so I invited Pat to do a webinar for us. And on this podcast, you'll hear I'm talking to Pat in sort of an informal interview to really ask, I always say, my selfish questions, the weird questions that I have that I want to, you know, get to the bottom of certain things with our experts. And then at the end of this short interview, I think it goes about 10, 15 minutes, we then will play the audio portion of Pat's webinar, which is an introduction to servant leadership. Now, if you want to see her slides, if you want to get the full training experience, we will be offering the webinar for a limited 3-day trial. And then, of course, it goes into the archives. And if you aren't already familiar with it, visit leadx.org, where you can do a free trial and get access to 1,000 different resources, from podcasts and book summaries to webinars, micro learning videos, and of course, the legendary Coach Amanda, the world's first executive coach built with IBM Watson. So get a free trial at leadx.org, and that's where you'll be able to find additional resources related to servant leadership. So with no further ado, here's my conversation with Pat Filatico. You spent 31 years at IBM, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I was 12.
For most of the time there, did you encounter a lot of servant leadership inspiration and models, or did it change over time at all?
I think it changed over time, but I would tell you that across my career, I encountered role models and examples of servant leadership. We didn't call it that, right?
Right.
The company was founded over 115 years ago. And when it was founded around a set of basic beliefs, and respect for the individual was core to it. It evolved into a set of values of respect and responsibility in all relationships, which was its modern manifestation. But you know, no matter where you are, there were people who embodied that and lived it. And there were people who did not.
Right.
I had a number of great leaders over the course of my career that really did embody it. Perhaps some of them who knew the terminology, but we never used it,
right,
coming out of their faith development. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't until I heard Carol Tomei use the term that I knew it was a business thing.
Well, so that was going to be my follow-up. So when did you discover the Greenleaf Center and the work, you know, under Robert Greenleaf's model?
So here's the honest truth. I discovered the Greenleaf Center 4 months before I took the job. When the search happened looking for a new CEO. Now, I didn't know Robert Greenleaf. I knew the term servant leadership. Right. But it's interesting, once you start hearing the term, you hear it everywhere, mm-hmm, right? And then once you hear it everywhere, and you're interviewing for a job, you get to start doing some research. And I will tell you, over the course of the last 5 years, I have gone from not knowing anything about Robert Greenleaf, to being an absolute follower of what he said. I quote him incessantly. There is so much that he said that is right. He's so much that he said that has meaning in our world today. He wrote it in 1970. Think about that.
So where did he get his inspiration? I mean, you mentioned, was it a faith-based approach or something else?
So Greenleaf was a Quaker. Huh. Passed in 1990. He, from what I understand about, from his biography, he was really into small individual groups. You know, the way the Quakers approach faith is kind of different than the traditional church. But, you know, universities wasn't his thing. He thought, you know, universities and big institutions, although important, were not the best way for people to learn. So he came to the concept of servant leadership probably through the 38 years that he worked at AT&T.
Yeah.
He retired as the director of what we would call leadership development today. And it was management and research at the time. He had access to some of the greatest leaders of the time.
Yeah.
And he spoke of the insight and the foresight of some of those leaders as the way they managed to deal with antitrust issues early on before AT&T was broken up. And then when he left AT&T, he continued to do consulting and study. And it kind of the switch flipped for him, reading Hermann Hesse's A Journey to the East and that character of Leo. And after reflecting upon how Leo led that expedition, how Leo then disappeared and then reappeared, that he said, yes, the secret to great leadership is that you are experienced first as servant. He acknowledged the spiritual and religious aspects. He acknowledged Jesus Christ as a great servant leader, but that's not where he got it.
Right.
But we see it manifested, that concept of service, in all of the Western religions.
Sure.
We do believe that it is, it's got a religious root, but we believe people of every faith and of no faith can truly embrace what we talk about in servant leadership.
Yeah. And I'm curious, again, these are sort of like, I say it's my self-interest. You know, I'm being selfish with these questions. They're really things I am curious about. What I find interesting about servant leadership is, unlike other leadership styles or models that have become trademarked or associated with certain companies, servant leadership, if you were to Google on it, you'll find lots of books and articles from people and maybe even some trainers on it. I mean, how do you feel about that? Is it like, hey, this isn't it great that more people are spreading, you know, the gospel of servant leadership?
Yeah.
Or is it like, wait a minute here, that's not the official, they're not an official apostle. Maybe I'm taking the religious angle too far.
Yeah.
And like, they might be changing the meaning or going in a direction that's diluting it in some way.
Yeah. So let me tell you a story. Yes, I believe that having people take this concept of servant leadership out and bringing transformation to the way people lead is the best answer. Would I like them to do it according to what Greenleaf said? Of course I would. But Greenleaf didn't feel the need to do that. Or he would have trademarked servant as leader in 1970. He didn't feel the need to do that. So what we do is we really do hope that when people talk about servant leadership, they do embody what it is. And I hear so many people on the circuit, even Ken Blanchard in his latest book, when I met him a year ago, turned to the back index and said, look, Pat, look at all of the places I have referenced Robert Greenleaf.
That's great.
So those who are out there today who are speaking about servant leadership work, inspired by Robert Greenleaf, they will tell you that.
Yeah.
So we're good because they understand the basic premise. I was talking to an association, probably 4 years ago, And they had, it was set up in a luncheon framework, and there were flower boxes as the centerpiece. And everyone was painted with a different attribute. And they said, oh, isn't that great? Look at all these great servant leadership attributes. Are they right? And my answer, I kind of took a step back and I said, they're wonderful. Because it isn't a question of right or wrong. Right? Of course, trust. Of course, empathy. Of course, the things that I spoke about are elements of servant leadership. But there's others who will say, you know, lack of blaming others.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
Element of servant leadership. So if we really agree on three things about servant leadership, we're good. Natural desire to serve. You have to be integrated as a servant and a leader. You can't just pretend to be the servant part, right? You have to be both. Second, that you hold yourself accountable to the best test. Am I investing in the growth of others? And third, the why we do it. We do it really so that we create a better world. And if we agree on those three things, have at it in how you define it. Remember where you got it. And let's continue to build a community that brings this kind of leadership to the forefront.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. And that seems like a great, healthy way to keep doing your work for the center and collaborating with others as needed. The other thing I was curious about, you mentioned in the webinar of this idea of self-awareness, right? And critical.
Yeah.
And I'm a self-awareness junkie and personality profiles and all that good stuff. You mentioned, you used an example of DISC being a high D. I'm a high D in the DISC model. Do you have a preferred, or does the center offer a preferred assessment? Or it's like, again, self-awareness is good wherever you're getting it from.
If I need to in workshops, I am a reseller of DISC. Mm-hmm. I do believe it's the most straightforward way to make my point.
Yeah.
Because my point isn't letting you know everything about yourself.
Right.
My point is to make sure that you won't know about yourself and about others. Right. And it's a real good tool to use to make that happen. If an organization brings a different model to the table, I'm happy to use it. In our online program, we do something very rudimentary just to get to the same outcomes of knowing about yourself and about others, to be able to answer the question, do I enrich, am I neutral, or do I diminish and deplete? But yes, not a paid performance, paid advertising for a while, yes, but I do bring, if I need to bring a survey to the table, I use Wiley's DISC assessment.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that I learned, something new is, and I would encourage anybody who's thinking about going to your website and doing some training for themselves, or maybe bringing, you know, you and your resources into their organization. There are many, like, I think a lot of people hear servant leadership and think it's this philosophical, oh yeah, I know, we're supposed to put others before interests. They don't realize there's a lot of practical, like, stuff you can train on. And I think fundamental for management leadership to me is giving feedback. And, I've taught that, you know, for years. I'd spoken to Kim Scott, wrote a book, you know, Radical Candor, and great book about feedback. Tell everybody a little bit, because you shared in your webinar, like, your approach to giving feedback.
Well, my approach to giving feedback, you know, just starts with observable fact. You know, because if you think about it, one of the things that we have to really tackle is, what are the inhibitors to giving and receiving good feedback? And when we understand what those inhibitors are, we then have to figure out, well, how do I get around them? So one of those major inhibitors that I will hear people say is, oh, I'm worried about the reaction I'm going to get when I offer feedback. And one of the things that comes to mind is that you probably don't do it very well, right? Mm-hmm. We try to shorthand feedback, right? You blew it. Well, I would be kind of pissed off if that's what my leader told me about a situation. If instead I focused it on the learning, then I would be in much more good frame of mind to hear what's being offered. I encourage people to really examine their own barriers and then work their strategies. But I tell people in summary, if first you focus on the learning, you give it as well as you receive it, right? And if people are uncomfortable giving it to you, that's probably because you've not been open to receiving it. That you also think about, do I give feedback when the situation warrants a celebration?
Yeah.
Do I do it as often and as thoroughly when it's a situation? And if I'm not doing it, then I want you to triple the amount that you're doing.
Yeah.
If you do it once a year, then do it three times a year. Get in the habit of offering feedback that sounds as detailed around that model I showed you in the webinar for celebrating. Because my ear is going to come to expect that you're not going to offer me feedback only when I've done something wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm more likely to receive it because you're as apt to give it in a way that celebrates. I encourage people to recognize that tone matters. We are human beings. Servant leaders are not saints.
Right.
All right. We are human beings that get frustrated. But if I offered you feedback and I was frustrated, that tone matters. So although I'd ask you to do it right away because you would miss some of the things you needed to observe, if you're really frustrated, I encourage you to take a walk first. Cool down and really focus on your tone, because your tone is going to underline your emotions, even if the words are perfect. Those are just some things I offer as ideas.
Yeah. And I think what I love is, and I think many people struggle to give feedback. That continues to be something I struggle with. And the idea of, like, you know, start with facts and talk about impact. Well, use that, as you say, catching people doing things right. Instead of good job today, Pat, you know, there's some positive recognition. It'd be better to say, Pat, when you did that trial close at the end of the sales call, he then opened up and gave you one more objection that you were then able to handle. And then it went for, like, it's the same feedback. State the fact. What did you do? The impact. And just do positive feedback with that model until it's like second nature. And then it will spin into the constructive version.
Yeah. Just practice it.
Yeah.
People's ears will be trained that you are focused on their learning.
Yeah.
You are focused on their learning, and they're going to be so willing to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, so people are out there, they'll say, why don't we give people the sandwich method? Say something nice and say something constructive, say something else nice. I lose the meat in that, right? Because I heard all the good stuff, and my brain wants to latch on to the good stuff. You got to be honest about the meat.
Right.
Right. Gotta be honest about the meat.
Right. Right.
Sorry for the analogy.
So let me leave with this. I don't know if this is going to be ending on a hopeful note or not. I mean, do you get frustrated? I mean, think about how long we've had servant leadership out there, right? And how long so many people have been trying to spread that message. And boy, you know, whether you're looking, so here in the United States, you know, but it's not limited to just here, like whether it's our government institutions, whether it's businesses, whether it's our neighbors, you know, it often seems like we're going backwards in terms of the spirit of this, and that we need the message more now than ever before. I mean, how do you see it?
All right. So I am, an incurable optimist. So let me start with that. So much so that on January the 21st, I sent 535 servant as leader copies to every member of Congress.
Oh, fantastic.
And I encouraged them to explore their servant nature as they opened the new year, and ask them to think about, do we serve first? I think the issue in our society is that we still equate leadership with those who accumulate power.
Mm.
And I think we need to demand something different. This is my other absolute belief. I am the mother of millennials, and I do believe that they are going to demand something different. They'll change society.
Good.
We can truly invest in their growth and the way they think about the broad definition of leadership, because I know that they get the purpose thing.
Right.
Right. I think if we can really invest in the growth of that generation of leaders over time, this will shift. But that's what our call is.
Right.
I have some great friends here in Atlanta where I live, have lived for about 25 years, that have been in great business roles, great civic roles. They give back to our community. And at the 60, 70 year old level of their life, they're focused on what does civic leadership look like for the 20 and 30 somethings. And they're coaching and they're mentoring and they're inviting those younger people to the table that they otherwise wouldn't have access to. Because we know that if we're going to build this society, you're younger than I am. I might not see it. You may not see it, but I want my son to see
right.
it. I want my daughter to see it. I want them to be a part of it. And that's why it's so important for us to invest in how younger people see leadership. Universities have a huge place to play in that. There's a number of them around the United States that practice servant leadership, that embed it in their curriculum, that put it in experiences. That's where we got to be.
Oh, I feel more hopeful for that. I think that's great. I've got three kids, two in college, one in high school. And I know that, you know, those who are a little bit older than them too. It does seem like the younger generation disassociates power with leadership and is a little bit more focused on others and giving back.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask all of your listeners to go to my website, find the little bit on, it's actually on LinkedIn and on Facebook. Back in January, when we posted about that congressional mailing, send an email to your elected official and say, hey, what'd you get out of that reading that she sent you?
That's great.
It would be so much fun to get people challenged. I got a lot of people saying, that's a great idea. But I asked them, put a little bit more pressure. Do you know, from what I understood when I worked for IBM, you've got three people who call a congressman's office. They pay attention.
Yeah.
Three. One's not good enough. So I did the one. I sent it over the bow. Need two more people for every congressperson.
I'll be the two. So now we just need the one others.
Times 534.
Right. That's right. It's doable.
It's doable.
Pat, tell our listeners who haven't watched the end of the webinar, what's the best way to learn more about the work you're doing and to follow along?
Yeah. So the Greenleaf website is the best place to go. Greenleaf.org, G-R-E-E-N-L-E-A-F.org. It lays out all of that history of Robert Greenleaf that we talked about. It lays out our programs and our offerings and ways that you can get engaged. We're on all of the social media platforms as well, at Greenleaf Center on Facebook and Twitter, the Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership on LinkedIn.
Pat, thanks for coming on the show and thanks for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun. Hi, my name is Pat Filatico. I'm the CEO of the Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership. The Greenleaf Center was founded in 1964 by Robert K. Greenleaf after a long career at AT&T. The center was founded as the Center for Applied Ethics. Over the course of his career, Greenleaf understood uniquely what it took for leaders to lead in an ethical way and consistent with a manner in which you develop people to be their best. He coined the phrase servant leadership in 1970 in his seminal essay, The Servant is Leader, where he observed the behaviors of Leo, the main member of the tribe that took a mystical journey. And what he understood about Leo's character was the secret to his greatness is that he was really perceived as servant first, someone who was investing in the best of those that he was leading on this expedition. In 1970, The modern movement of servant leadership was born with that very first essay. And what I hope to do today is to take you through the journey. I don't know about you, but when I got my very first management job, it wasn't because I had some very strong leadership skills. It was because I was pretty much the best on the team. And my management thought it would be really good for me to lead the rest of the team to achieve the same outcomes I was able to. I learned by very hard work that leading and doing were two different things. And managing and leading were absolutely two different things. Over the course of my career, like many of you, I was able to earn lots of promotions, running bigger and bigger pieces of the organization. More and more people within my realm of influence. Climbing the corporate ladder, absolutely, bigger chunks of business. It was great to take on the challenges that the company had entrusted on me. More and more people, but I was busy working on the business, not as often as being connected to the people. You see the gatekeeper who kept the people at bay to make sure that I had the time to get my work done. And it continued as you continue to climb the corporate ladder until finally you can't crown king or perhaps just merely the CEO. Along my journey, perhaps along your journey, you echoed the refrain that it's all about the people. In fact, this image of the inverted pyramid was something that I learned from Carol Tomei, the CFO of Home Depot, which when she described the culture of the Home Depot as being an inverted pyramid, where every level of leadership supported the next all the way out to the associates. But one thing I have found over the history of my career is that at times, while we believed it was all about the people, we didn't always live it. It was often about the objectives of the organization and how we were going to serve the shareholder. We sometimes forget that the people who actually do the work of any institution are those who are on the front line. And those of us who are in leadership have a singular responsibility of enabling them to be the best they can be, so that together in teams, we produce the work of the organization, and that organization thrives in all of the aspects of business outcome that they have set their mission and vision for. So what is servant leadership then? Servant leader believes that in order to succeed, you must help others succeed. You cannot do it alone. Imagine any company like IBM, where I served for 31 years, that the leader thought it was all on their back. How is it possible to do business in 140 countries, serving thousands and thousands of clients, to do it by yourself? You must invest in others. You make sure that you understand what's in the best interest of those that you serve, because you cannot help those achieve their best if you don't understand what is at the heart of their aspirations. The servant leader responds by listening first to any situation. They don't bark a point of view before they fully understand, and they truly invest time in the people that they serve. There's lots of different leaders with loud voices over our history that tell us that in order to succeed, we must first serve. So let's define servant leadership a little bit closer to how Robert Greenleaf did. He said that it starts with the natural desire that one wants to serve. Then we identify and then meet the needs of those within our organization. We take an ethical, practical approach to how we lead. It's not self-serving, it's other-serving. We enable others to perform at their highest level, and in doing all of that, the organization fulfills its mission. We start with the concept that it's a natural desire that one wants to serve, and then it's a conscious choice that one wants to lead. This natural desire thought is difficult for some. They think that you are born this way, But I believe that it's actually a process of nurturing. The role models in your life, the people who are put on your path, the opportunities throughout the journey for conversion of heart, so that you can really take a point of view that says, you know what, it's not about me. It is about others. It's about your values. It's about how you come to work, to community, to life every day as someone who's committed to the growth of others. When you make that conscious choice to lead, the question is, what does your leadership attributes include? For the servant leader, it starts with self. Self-awareness. Do we know enough about ourselves so that we relate effectively to others? It's about empathy. It's about building connections with others so that when you expect great outcomes, you also don't forget that the people bring their whole selves into our relationships. It's about foresight and how you make decisions every day that impact others. When we're really strong with how we serve ourselves and we focus on how we serve others, how do we listen? How do we build others through feedback and coaching in particular? How do we persuade versus coerce? And then we get to work at delivering against the objectives of the organization, getting alignment around our vision, everyone within the organization believing in the same things, putting together the set of activities that will lead us to achieve that vision, and then relentlessly executing. You see, when a team comes together around execution, around a vision that is based on leadership that truly believes in them and wants them to be at their best, their outcomes exceed the outcomes of the standard company. In fact, the Magellan Group did a study a number of years ago. Of all of the companies that were in Jim Collins' Good to Great Companies, those who practice servant leadership even outperformed those. So we know that when you build a culture based on servant leadership, you're going to get great outcomes. So I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes highlighting some of those key attributes we talked about. First, we talk about self-awareness. Greenleaf said, awareness is not a giver of solace. It is a disturber and an awakener. How many of us have taken a plethora of personality and leadership assessments that tell us everything we need to know about who we are? The issue is not to take solace in what that tells us about our strengths. It is to really dig deep and ask ourselves, when are we enriching others by being who we are? But perhaps more fundamentally, when do I diminish someone else by being who I am? Imagine for a minute you're like me. I take my DISC assessment. I'm a high D. I am a charger. I like to get things done yesterday. I practiced for a very long time the principles of fire, aim, ready. Right? I'm okay if I have to change paths halfway through. But when I started to understand that that was diminishing those that work with me, from the point of view is that made them nervous. They needed to know which way to go. I needed to adjust so that the team and I could move forward together. That's what Greenleaf meant about developing a keen sense of self-awareness. You might think about empathy in terms of how we create connection with others. How do we think about the whole person? And how do we ask questions about what's going on within their lives? Greenleaf took perhaps another step forward on the concept of empathy. And he said the servant always accepts another, always empathizes. So I appreciate you as a person. I don't necessarily accept that the results that you're creating are good enough, but I care about you as a person. I remember a time that I had a wonderful leader who was so disappointed in the results of a project that I was leading. But he took the time, after really being clear that he was disappointed in the outcome, to make it clear that he had confidence in me as a person. And I needed to develop the skills to be able to succeed. But his confidence in me, that empathy, was what really developed my ability to achieve good things in the future. And then foresight. The leader needs to have a sense for the unknowable and be able to foresee the unforeseeable. That sounds kind of scary, doesn't it? How do I know what the unknowable is? How do I foresee the unforeseeable? For me, it's beginning to appreciate that when you have to make a decision, there's patterns. There's patterns because there's probably nothing in the world that doesn't have an analogy in the past. What do I learn from a similar situation of the past? How can that be applied to the current reality? And then finally, what are the possible solutions that I can envision to address my reality today? But the most important step, something that we typically forget to ask, is what is the unintended consequences of those solutions in the future? When I see that all is one, the past, the present, and future, I am in a much better position to make a solid recommendation on the best way to approach a solution that serves my organization. So I work on myself. I serve myself in these ways so that I can be better positioned to serve others. Greenleaf said that the first thing that a natural servant does in any situation is to listen first. Wouldn't it be interesting for us to show up in a situation that we didn't have any hand in developing to immediately start barking orders when we don't know the context? Listen first. He said that true listening builds strength in other people. Why? Because they reason for themselves the best possible path forward. And they take those best possible paths because they are informed by their own enlightenment that that's the best to choose. And then my personal credo, I've been working on this one for 5 years. Sometimes we talk for just talking purposes, right? So the question is, if I say what's on my mind right now, will it truly improve upon the silence? We use that listening skills in how we build people. What I love about what Greenleaf says here, and this is something that I practiced in my career at IBM over and over and over again, is that we know that personal development, professional development, is the responsibility of the person who needs to develop. The leader, the coach, the mentor comes alongside, but they need to own it. And we need to help them own it by what I consider the two most effective ways. First, feedback. How do you offer feedback? Now, we can get into conversations. There's lots of people out there that says, I love feedback. We don't do it very often. So if you love it, why don't we do it very often? We don't do it very often because it's typically scary and it takes time. It takes time for the leader to pay attention, and it takes time for the leader to deliver it in an intentional manner that's all about the learning for the person that you're offering the feedback to. We created a very simple model. We start with the facts. Facts can't be disputed. Now, I know we live in a world where alternate facts exist, but the reality is facts are observable. Facts are things that have happened. You can give them the why and the what for that it happened, but it did happen. Then we say, you know what? Here was the impact of that reality. Perhaps we missed the opportunity to get a proposal in on time because your contribution was late, right? Next time, we have to make sure we reach out a little bit earlier, so that we really use that learning to allow us to get better. And then find a way to appreciate the fact that the conversation was a productive one and move on. It doesn't have to be a relationship breaker. It has to be about the building and the learning. The other side of the coin in building is all about coaching. Now, I use the image of a coach, but we all know that the coach often is a teacher. The coach in business is not necessarily a teacher. The coach is the person who comes alongside of you and helps you grow. The coach asks great questions that allow you to identify the barriers that keep you in place and to allow you to figure out the outcomes that will lead you to the next breakthrough. If it's appropriate, the coach can use stories from their own experience that can help you see that they've been in your place. They've evaluated different pathways forward, but they don't tell. They help you develop your path forward. And then after building, one of the things the servant leader needs to learn is the prime skill of persuasion. Now, I don't know about you, but when you need to be bring about change, I've had plenty of opportunities where broad pronouncements come out and chart the course going forward. Not speaking to me as an individual about what my role in that changed environment needs to be. Persuasion is about how to make that connection with the other to say, this is good for you and good for the organization, but recognizes that the other chooses for themselves, that the path forward is the best path for them. It's kind of humbling when you recognize that you can't coerce your way into change. People have to choose it for themselves. The last piece of the model that I'd like to cover for you is Greenleaf's best test. And in his best test, he doesn't say, how well did you grow your company? What he says is, your best test is how well did you grow your people? Do those, while they're being served by you, become stronger people? Are they healthier, wiser, freer, and more autonomous, more likely themselves to be servants? And what about the least privileged in society? Do they benefit, or at least are they not further deprived? Let me give you a little bit of a deeper dive on each one of those. Well, first of all, the whole concept of the best test is about we feel joyful at work. Imagine that if everybody in our society felt joyful and fulfilled at work. Think about everything that you've read about employee engagement. Would that reality change from less than 30% to high 90s if everyone felt joyful and fulfilled in their work? What if they found purpose and meaning in their work? It's not just about, I'm going to produce this widget, but that widget is going to change society in some way. And what if it was built on a platform of trust where I trust others and I'm deeply trustworthy? Those are the key elements, the overarching themes, if you will, of the best test. And as we dig deeper, we think about health in a very different way. It's not just physical health. It's not just about the employee benefits to make sure that should you need mental health resources, dental resources, you've got a benefits package that takes care of that. Is the community, is the environment set up that you can grow healthier across four dimensions of health: physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual? And that spiritual component being that joy that we talked about a moment ago. What kind of attitude do you bring to a situation when there's a challenge? Some people are completely paralyzed by it. Do you as a leader create an environment where people encounter opportunities as exciting, enabling, and fulfilling? And then most importantly, the thing that people report about is, how are we managing stress? Stress is not always a bad thing, right? There is stress that takes us to a new level. The energy that we get from trying some new stuff. But we can't allow stress to be debilitating. As a leader, do you bring stress to a situation or do you pull it out? Question of wisdom In most organizations, we spend a lot of money making sure that we train people to do the smarts of the organization, technical skills that allow them to be great at what they do. The servant leader takes that as a base level of training and recognizes we need to help people grow by really looking at their own self-awareness. How do they learn? How do they share experience? How do we begin to bring listening to the table so that they can really begin to break through on their own? How do we use what we talked about a moment ago in terms of foresight and reflection? How do we grow freer and more autonomous? How do we assert our individual and organizational perspective? How do we speak truth to power might be another way of saying it. We need to be able to encourage people to bring their perspective to the table. We need to have people grow more courageous working within teams so that they feel emboldened to bring their opportunities and their ideas. And we have to balance commitment and competence. And this is something that I really, really believe in a great deal. Many people want to be autonomous. Many people want to be able to go out and do their own thing because they've got this. But we as leaders have to help them grow both competent and committed. Imagine if you're sitting at Apple today and you have the insights of bringing all of those tremendous offerings to the table that they thought about yesterday. But you know what? You're not that committed to Apple itself. How autonomous do you think leadership at Apple would want you to be? Because you've got to come with both of those things together, believing that while you're there with that company to deliver upon your great insights will lead to a great outcome. Then I entrust you to be autonomous. But the individual doesn't do that alone. The servant leader invites you to grow more committed to the organization while they invest in you becoming more competent. More likely to serve others. This is the power of the role model. This is the power of saying that if I am growing as a member of this team, I want everyone to grow along with me. I am not out for myself. I'm out for the team. I'm out for the organization. I'm out for the society at large. And I am going to invest and pay this forward in all the relationships that I am a part of. And finally, the least privileged. How do I practice ethical decision making? When I'm making a decision, perhaps on opening or closing a plant, how do I think about the entire ecosystem that will be impacted by the decision? Or do I only think about it from the perspective of my company? How do I respect everyone in the community? Just because they might be voiceless today doesn't mean that their voice should not be heard. And then how do I create a more loving and just society? It's not good enough for our organizations to just focus on self, others, and organization. We've got to be able to contribute to this more loving and just society. Greenleaf has a credo, and I think that the why behind servant leadership is really embedded in this credo, is that we are in relationship, as I paraphrase. We are in relationship with each other. The more able and the less able serving each other, so that each of the institutions, be that business, public sector, the church, the nonprofit center, all of the institutions are looking at how do they serve. And we are measuring ourselves by, are we leaving behind a more loving and just world? That's what gets me up in the morning, is that this servant leadership stuff is good for individuals, it's good for teams, it's good for business, and it's good for society. And our responsibility at the Greenleaf Center is to serve that mission, to make sure that we're promoting the practice of servant leadership across all sectors. And here's just a few ways that you can follow up with us at the Greenleaf Center through our website and through all of the typical social media outlets that you would expect us to be on. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, L-E-A-D-X.O-R-G, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?